What is going on with Kate Middleton?
Which cult is popping off right now?
What the hell is a trad wife?
And why are we so obsessed with them?
I'm Jody Walker.
And I'm Chelsea Stark-Jones.
And we're obsessed.
Obsessed with all the pop culture happenings, filling our group chats and For You pages.
And we want to talk about them with you.
Our new show, We're Obsessed, is for all the things we're loving, buying, watching, listening to, and spiraling over right now.
Follow the Ringer Dish feed on Spotify to listen to We're Obsessed every Friday.
It's the Ringer's Philly special presented by FanDuel. The playoff action is heating up. And with FanDuel, you can bet on everything from the NBA Finals MVP to who's going to lift the Stanley Cup. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub, filter by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same-game parlays all on one page, plus start betting on the pulse and get paid instantly when you win. So download the app today and bet with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available and listen to the end of the episode for additional details. Must be 21 plus, 18 plus in DC, and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on, I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit jiffylube.com.
Hungry dogs run fast.
It's truly a Philly thing here.
Welcome to the Ringers Philly special. Sheila Kapati here. It's the Sunday night show. Let me start by giving you a little peek behind the curtain, okay? We had this episode all ready for you. We recorded earlier today. And then the Eagles signed Mekhi Becton. So it's not the earth-shattering signing, but we said, hey, if we're doing a weekend recap, let's make sure we get something on Mekhi Becton in the pod. So that's why it pays have an ace producer in Cliff Augustine who said, yeah, go ahead, record something, send it over, and I will rework the pod before we post it. So that's what we're going to do. I'm going to give you a little something on the Eagles signing of Mekhi Becton. Then I'm going to talk a little Eagles draft with just a little leftover from the weekend. And then a very fun, for us at least, Sixer segment with me, Cliff, and Raheem Palmer that is kind of like a Sixers therapy session where I kind of lost it during that segment, and we also had some good laughs, and so that was a fun one to do, making fun of the Sixers, ripping the Sixers for their loss against the New York Knicks. So that's the show. Very simple. We'll do a little Becton, we'll do a little draft, and then we'll do a little Sixers. All right, let's start with Mekhi Becton. So Dolek and I talked on Saturday night recapping the Eagles draft, and I said my biggest surprise was that they didn't come away from the draft with an offensive tackle. It was that, and also that they didn't come away with competition for Tyler Steen at guard. So Howie Roseman said during his press conference that he was kind of surprised too. You know, they were looking at offensive tackles. They were interested in offensive tackles, but the way the board fell, they just didn't land one during the draft. So on Sunday, they had a contingency plan, which smart organizations do, and they addressed tackle by signing 2020 first-round pick Mekhi Becton, who spent his first, 24 seasons with the New York Jets. So per Adam Schefter, it's a one-year deal worth up to $5.5 million dollars. As we know, up to means it's worth less than that. You got to hit some incentives. You got to hit some specific benchmarks to get to 5.5 million. So we're not talking about huge money. We're talking about backup tackle money. As far as post-draft flyers go, I have to admit, this one's kind of exciting. You know, sometimes you sign someone, you say, okay, he was out there for, and listen, Becton was absolutely out there for a reason. Teams are desperate for offensive tackle help. And if there were teams out there, I think he visited with the Bengals at one point, but Bengals ended up drafting a tackle in the first round, so he might've been their contingency plan as well. If teams felt like Becton could start for them, he would have been off the market way earlier. He was a free agent. It's not like the Jets just released him. So take all this with a grain of salt. This is a guy who at least has physical tools that are interesting. So Jets drafted Becton 11th overall in 2020. He started 13 games as a rookie at left tackle. He actually played well as a rookie. There was a lot of optimism around Mekhi Becton after his rookie year in 2020. Then he got hit with injuries. Then there were questions about his weight, about his conditioning, about his knee. 2021 and 2022, the guy plays a total of one game. And I mean, he was in the headlines often in the summer, Robert Saleh saying, yeah, we're easing him in. He might not be quite where we need it. Like it was just constant with Mekhi Becton. And so going into last season, I actually had outlined Becton as a huge key player, like in a league-wide podcast I remember I did with Solak. I thought Becton was a huge swing player because the Jets really needed him to be a good player for them if they were going to make the playoffs. Now, obviously, Aaron Rodgers went down in week one. They had all sorts of issues, and he ended up not being a key player. But the good news is he at least came back. He started 16 games. That's something. Now, he didn't look like the same guy. He didn't play well. He looked nothing like the guy we saw in 2020 as a rookie, and that's the reason he's on the market. That's the reason the Jets parted ways with him. So now he's entering year five, and it's been a while since we've seen Mekhi Becton play at a consistently competent level. Most of the times with a profile like this, it doesn't happen for the guy, but you're hoping for an exception. And there are exceptions in the NFL. There are weird careers in the NFL. There are times where guys suddenly find something in the right spot with the right coach, with the right teammates, with the right motivation, with the right injury luck, all those things. Again, a lot of things have to align, but you do see that from time to time, and those are really fun, interesting stories. So what's the case for Mekhi Becton turning his career around? One, he has rare physical gifts, traits, whatever, if you want to go Howie Roseman and say tools in his body, go ahead, say tools in his body. 6'7", 364 coming out of college with 35 5/8-inch arms. I mean, we were talking about Johnny Wilson's arms. I mean, this guy, 35 5/8-inch arms, and he ran a 5.1 40-yard dash coming out of college. Just like, again, as Howie Roseman, as scouts say, not a lot of humans on earth with that big, able to move like that. If you look on Mock Draftable for the most similar just physical profile, it's J.C. Latham, the tackle guard from Alabama who just went 7th overall to the Tennessee Titans. So that's the kind of physical profile you're talking about. So there are absolutely tools to work with just from a size, athleticism perspective. The question is, how much are those tools diminished because of injuries? And obviously the answer is some. There's no doubt about it. The question is, how much has that athleticism been affected because of those injuries he's dealt with in 2021 and 2022? Now, the other big factor is the one probably as soon as you heard this, it's where your mind went, and that's to your favorite offensive line coach, Jeff Stoutland, a guy with a track record of developing players. Obviously, Jordan Mailata is the most famous one, the most well-known one, and that's a credit to both Mailata, but also to Jeff Stoutland. Take a blank slate like this, and say it like him and say, hey, if you do the things I tell you to do, and if you work hard, you have a chance to really be a good player in this NFL, in this league. And now look at Jordan Mailata. He's on what, his third contract at this point. So projects like this, I mean, if you talk to NFL coaches, like this is what gets coaches going, position coaches, especially a guy like Stoutland, who probably scouted Becton, who definitely scouted Becton coming out in 2020 and saw the rare blend of size and athleticism and said, all right, we're not going to be in position to draft a guy like this, but man, he's exciting. I'm sure that was his thought process. And so now he looks at it and says, all right, Mekhi Becton is going into his age 25 season. He's got a lot on the line here. I mean, if Becton plays well, even if it's like a four-game sample, let's say Mailata, Lane Johnson, let's say they go down for like four games and Becton comes in and he plays really well and the clips of him pancaking people are circulating on social media and other teams are taking a look at it and Jets fans are going, oh my gosh, I can't believe we let that guy go. Again, he's not going to be a 17-game starter unless something goes horribly wrong with Lane Johnson or Jordan Mailata. Even if it's a small sample, that's a big deal for a guy like Mekhi Becton at this stage in his career. Remember what I just said. He's getting paid up to $5.5 million for 1 year. If he plays well over a month of the 2024 season, he'll be going into his age 26 season, former first-round pick with good film. A team is absolutely going to take a flyer on him and pay him a lot more money. Now, if it's an eight-game sample, if it's like the more you go, the higher the possibility of him earning a big payday. Even if he doesn't play as well as I was just describing, even if he's competent, I mean, competent left tackles get paid a lot of money in the NFL. So the point is, theoretically, you should be getting a really motivated player where you hope that someone is in his ear saying, like, this is, you know, I don't want to say last chance because there could be more chances, but maybe best chance, I think, would be fair. I think teams would look at this and say, man, if he couldn't get it together with Jeff Stoutland, then is he going to be able to do it in our environment? Now, even to that, there are exceptions. Andre Diller didn't do it with Jeff Stoutland, and he still got a monster contract with the Tennessee Titans. So again, it doesn't take much for offensive tackle. So he's got Stoutland, he's got Mailata, he's got Lane Johnson. He's got experience with those offensive tackles. This really is a good environment for a player like Mekhi Becton to get his career back on track. And again, I want to make clear, it could just be physically that it's not there anymore and it's no fault of his own and he works hard and he tries everything and he listens to Stoutland and it doesn't happen just because the injuries took a toll. We know in the NFL that happens all the time. So in terms of his role in 2024, he's pegged to be the swing tackle right now. He has 30 starts in his career. So the guy has experience. He has played football. He has reps. Different schemes, different pass pro techniques, different run blocking techniques. Like he has all of those things. He's played, I think he started two games last year at right tackle and the rest of the starts have been at left tackle. So that's nice. He has experience playing both sides. And I'm guessing that he will be trained on both sides and be your swing tackle. If Johnson or Mailata go down, you see how he performs. So, the other thing, I guess, I mean, this is a small percentage chance, but just in the event that Lane Johnson retires after the 2024 season, who knows? Maybe you got to look at Becton. You liked him, and this is a partnership that lasts more than 1 year. Again, that is a highly unlikely scenario. A lot of things would have to happen for that to play out, but it's at least one worth mentioning here when we talk about possible outcomes. So he could come in, he could play poorly, and he might just be a backup the rest of his career. He might be out of the league in a couple of years. Like, there are a wide range of outcomes with a player like this. But overall, I like the move. Like, it definitely, again, is in terms of signings made on the Sunday after the draft that have a little juice. I think this one has a little juice. Like, I want to get out there in August and watch Mekhi Becton and see what his teammates are saying about him and see what Jeff Stoutland's saying about him and seeing what Lane Johnson is saying and seeing what he looks like, because again, it's just the rare physical gifts, and now he has a chance to see if he can make something more of his career at age 25. That's interesting to me. So interesting storyline for the Eagles going into OTAs, mini camps, and then the summer. I think it's a wise investment. I think they needed a swing tackle anyway, and if you can do it with someone with some upside, absolutely, you do that every single time, even if you temper your expectations and make sure you know what you're getting there. So there you go, Mekhi Becton. All right, let's get to a draft leftover on the Eagles, and then we will close it out with a longer segment on your Philadelphia 76ers. One thing I wanted to talk about with the Eagles. You might have heard me and Solak talking about the consensus board during the last episode. So what is the consensus board? In case you missed it, this is something that was an idea first thought of, at least that I saw, by Arif Hassan, where he took draft boards. This year, I think it's up to 101 draft analysts, okay? And this is the public stuff. This isn't like the boards that the teams have or within the league. This is all the public stuff that's out there. Your favorite media draft gurus, Danny Kelly, Ben Solak, Nate Tice, Dane Brugler, whoever else you like. He takes all of these, he puts them together, and he averages it out and comes up with a consensus ranking of the entire draft class going into the draft. He's been doing this for years, and he's found, you know, with his findings over the years, that the consensus board often outperforms individual teams. You know, we talk so much about, is this a good drafting team or a bad drafting team? And usually GMs don't get enough time to really show whether they have an edge or not. But also we find that, you know, sometimes you have a good draft, sometimes you have a bad draft. It just kind of depends. There's so much randomness and luck involved. And so when you look at this consensus board, it comes close to outperforming the entire league. And when you look at individual teams, it often does outperform those individual teams. So in other words, if a team just went by the consensus board and did nothing else, if they just looked at this board and, you know, they could have their own version of it if they wanted, or they could use Arif's version of it, that compared to what they actually do, you wouldn't see that much of a difference in terms of draft performance, in terms of did they have a good draft or a bad draft when you look at it 3, 4, 5 years down the line, which is wild to think about, because when you think about all the resources that teams put into the NFL draft now with scouting and coaching and analytics and the psychological stuff and the interviews. And I mean, it's like more involved now than it's ever been. Yet, if you just went by this board compared to what an individual team does, you really wouldn't see that much of a difference. So it sort of speaks to the luck and the randomness involved and how hard it is to draft. Now, a couple things to keep in mind here. One, when we consider a pick a steal, you'll hear that term all the time. Oh, they got a steal. This guy was supposed to go at spot X, but they got him at spot Y. And oh my gosh, what a steal. So take Cooper DeJean, for example. The consensus board this year had him at 22. The Eagles got him at 40. Now, oftentimes, those picks that are categorized as steals have a lot to do with a lack of information for the public. You know, it could be a medical issue, an injury issue. It could be something character related that maybe is not made public. It could be bad interviews. It could be scheme fit. It could be a lot of different things. But basically, we have to understand that the NFL has more information on these guys than we do as a public. And even if you're a plugged in reporter, that's the case. I mean, some teams have more information on guys than other teams. So we're always at sort of an information deficit. So as I said on a previous pod, the idea that the Eagles got, oh, they got a top 20 player at 40, like that's not really true. I mean, teams had 39 chances to get DeJean. Like teams are in the business of taking the players they think can most help them. And 39 times teams passed on DeJean because they thought another player was a better option. So like it's, I don't know if efficient market is the right way to phrase it. I'm kind of out of my league there, but you get the point. Players go where the league tells us they value them. And so Cooper DeJean is not like top 20 player. He's the 40th player because that's where he went. They have to tell us the truth with how they pick. So that's one thing to keep in mind. Don't get caught up in kind of steals in the draft. This is something that kind of happened last year with N'Kobe Dean. And it's just another good reminder this year. Now, another big takeaway with these consensus boards, and this is maybe the biggest takeaway, is that when a team reaches on a prospect, so a team takes a player way higher than the consensus boards have them, the hit rate is quite low. Like this is one of the biggest takeaways from this exercise of looking at a consensus board. When a team takes a player, let's say they take a guy 18th and the consensus board has him 57th, those types of picks usually do not work out well for the team. Like that to me is kind of the biggest takeaway from the whole exercise. So let's apply this to this year's Eagles draft. Okay. I was looking at it And shout out to Austin Gale from The Ringer, who kind of sent me a spreadsheet. He did a lot of the work looking at the individual prospects. The Eagles actually had only one pick that would be considered a reach by the consensus board. And we talked about this with Solak on Saturday. That was Jalix Hunt from Houston Christian, the edge defender. They took him 94th overall. The consensus board had him 140. So typically, that is the type of swing that does not work out well for the team. Now, it could work out this time. There are always one-offs, but it's the type of thing you don't want to do consistently. If you're consistently taking guys way higher than the consensus board says, just historically speaking, that has not worked out well for the team. So we'll see. I mean, Daniel Jeremiah said on NFL Network right after the pick that Jalix Hunt was one of Vic Fangio's favorite players in the entire draft. So that probably goes a long way of explaining it, that they were saying, all right, this might be a little bit higher than the consensus has him, but our defensive coordinator, who's been coaching in the league for decades, is pounding the table for him. Let's go ahead and take a flyer on him. So it seems like that was most likely the process there. But the rest of the Eagles picks, they got those guys right around where the consensus board had them ranked. Dylan McMahon, the center from NC State, they took him 32 spots ahead of consensus, but now we're talking about the 190th pick or whatever it was. So it's less of a big deal when you get to that point in the draft. Every other pick they had, either they got them kind of after where the consensus board thought they should be taken, or right around the range where they were supposed to be taken. The other way to look at this is by entire draft classes. You can look at which teams got the most value based on the consensus board, given the draft capital that they had, the picks that they had to use. And I'll shout out Jack Lichtenstein on Twitter, had the data on this. The Eagles ranked second behind only the Detroit Lions in terms of surplus with the consensus board. You know, you had teams at the bottom like the Atlanta Falcons and the Jacksonville Jaguars, who, if you just add up all their reaches in the draft, again, they were towards the bottom, and the Eagles were second behind only the Lions. And the Eagles were right up there last year also. So this is not to say it's a perfect, way to evaluate, and it's better than all the other draft grades you read or analysis you'll hear, but I think it is an interesting way to kind of look at it. It doesn't mean all the picks are going to work out, but when we talk about how do you evaluate a draft class right after the picks are made, again, you can talk about the process, you can talk about what positions did they choose, and this is just another way to look at it, to evaluate the draft class right after the picks are made. So by that, one way to look at it, the Eagles process-wise did a pretty good job. So just wanted to mention that one leftover on the Eagles draft. Again, check out the previous episodes. We did Thursday night after the Quinyon Mitchell pick. We did Friday after the two picks they made, Cooper DeJean and Jalix Hunt. And then we did Saturday, where we talked about the day three picks, but also just the draft overall. I thought that was a fun discussion with Solak about how the Eagles approached it, what their roster holes still are, whether we like the process, what we expect from the class, all those types of things. So check those out. This was just one more leftover. All right, that's it on Eagles. Let's take a break. When we come back, Raheem Palmer, Cliff Augustine, they will join me. We will talk Sixers Knicks.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. Win. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, File a claim right on the State Farm mobile app and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, welcome back to the Ringers Philly Special. Shield Kapati here, joined by Cliff Augustine, Raheem Palmer, two guys with sad looks on their face after the Philadelphia 76ers do what they do every year. Just they get your expectations up a little bit, and then they just burst your bubble, losing to the shorthanded, let me say that, shorthanded New York Knicks, 97-92 at home in Philadelphia, scoring 16 points in the fourth quarter. Not making a field goal in the last 5 minutes of the game, right when you thought, all right, they can even this thing back up, make it a best of three. They're in the driver's seat. They got the momentum. No, now they're down 3-1. Their season is on the, they're on the brink of elimination here. One more loss and it's over. Two games at the Garden, maybe one game at the Wells Fargo Center if it gets to that. And that they got to win all three to extend their season. All right, Raheem, you came on. You said this loss broke your heart. It was just, I mean, the game ended, what, just an hour and a half ago. We're recording this thing pretty early. How are you feeling? I mean, expectations versus what actually happened in this basketball game.
This was just heartbreaking because when you come into this game and it's clear that we already lost a swing game in the series, we should have won game two. But you're looking at this situation with Mitchell Robinson not in, Joel Embiid and Tyrese Maxey, the top-notch talent of them has proved that, if you ask me, they were the better team when Joel Embiid was on the floor. And that played out in the first half. You saw the first quarter, they're up 27-17. As soon as Joel Embiid sits down, this team doesn't know how to play basketball. And you know, the old adage from playoff basketball is that the role players and the bench guys, they play better at home. What did we get from our bench today? We got 6 points from the bench.
Oh, my God.
6 points. So, you know, like Joel Embiid had to play the entire second half. This is a guy coming off of an injury. He should not have to play the entire second half. This is the first time he's done that through his entire career. So it's like we're letting Embiid down. And I'm just so hurt.
I couldn't agree with Raheem more. I was, because a lot of people are going to come on today. A lot of Sixers fans are going to come on today and say, Joel Embiid sucked. He didn't step up in a big moment. Blah, blah, blah. This. I'm tired of the Embiid era, which I'm getting there, by the way. I'm getting there.
But I'm tired of the Embiid era. Yeah, I'm about to say that in a second.
Yeah. But today wasn't on him, though, bro. It wasn't on the big fellow today. Like, at some point, Kelly Oubre is going to have to make a solid decision on the basketball court. At some point, somebody's going to have to get a rebound other than Joel Embiid. At some point, somebody's going to have to hustle more than Kyle Lowry. At some point, when you know you can't get out rebounded, you know, 15-9 on the offensive glass, and then 21-8 in second chance points. Like, at some point, Tobias Harris is going to have to score more than like 10 points. At some point, somebody's going to have to do something other than Joel Embiid. Like, yo, he did his job today. So I can't even come on here and really blame him. He first of all, he looked fine like throughout the whole entire game too. Like, he was gassed towards the end because he had so many damn minutes played. But at the same time, it's like, yo, this guy's putting in the complete effort. Maxey didn't even show up. I was hoping Maxey was going to have a game. He didn't show up at all either in the fourth quarter. And I was just super upset over it all because they lost in the hustle plays. They didn't have an offense towards the last 5 minutes of the game. I remember one play where they had I think they were down like four, I believe. And Kelly Oubre literally comes up the court. He dribbles up the court, chucks up a three. I'm just like, bro, there's no way in hell this is what Nick Nurse designed. This is absolutely pathetic right here. Like, bro, we got to dive into this some more, but offensive rebounding, lack of hustle, lack of playmaking, Tobias Harris just being an anchor, like absolutely just holding us down, just – not helping us in any way, shape, or form. Like, it's all a total mess effort. And on top of that, bro, why are there so many Knicks fans in that lower bowl? Why? It felt like a home game for them. Why are people like...
It really did.
Like, I'm watching the game and I'm like, Brunson scoring, going off again. And all you hear is, yeah, let's go. I'm like, what?
MVP chance for Jalen
Brunson. MVP. This is Philly. In Philadelphia. When are y'all ever known an away team to take over a stadium like that? That's what we do. This is crazy. Crazy, man. I can't believe it. I really can't believe it. This is nonsense.
And I gotta put the whole offensive rebound thing in the context. Because when you put it in the context, it hurts even more. So the Knicks had a 35% offensive rebound rate. They rebounded 35% of their misses. If you look on Cleaning the Glass right now, that is in the 89th percentile of all NBA games this season. That can't happen at home.
And it was the same number, you know, like game one, right, Raheem? I remember looking at that. It was right up there.
It was 50% in game one.
It was higher, yeah.
A lot of people are making a point of like Hartenstein, you know, like, not being on the floor doing a lot of offensive reasons.
You know, like,
bro, Josh Hart might as well be 7'5". Like,
we're in an unfortunate situation of being so close to New York where, you know, we know Philadelphia is a blue-collar city. We know that, you know, we don't have the hedge funds and we don't have the high-priced lawyers and everything like that. And we don't have the entertainers that New York has. So those guys can come down. You know, we all know that the tickets are expensive in Madison Square Garden. So, you know, the common folk will just come down and say, you know what? The tickets are cheap here in Philadelphia. But we got to go out there and support our team. That can't happen.
Definitely can't happen versus a New York team.
I mean, Philly fans take pride in going elsewhere and doing that in other arenas. And like Charles Barkley was going nuts on Sixers fans at halftime of the previous game, talking about how are there this many Knicks fans here. All right, I got to talk more about Embiid because I don't understand a superstar in this city getting the excuse making made for him that I'm hearing right now. Cliff, he had 1 point and one rebound in the fourth quarter of a monster game with your season. He's tired. Like, there's always something. Every game, every season, there's something with him.
He's tired. Bro.
And athletes never been tired before. It's the freaking NBA playoffs, and you were the MVP last year. I don't care if you're tired. Get more than 1 point. Get me 8 points. Get me 6 points. He gave me 6 points and three rebounds. I mean, 1 point and one rebound. You just mentioned it. Hartenstein's on the bench. Embiid took Mitchell Robinson out of the series with a dirty play. Let's call it what it was in the previous game. He took him. Can you imagine if someone did that to a Sixers player? What we would be saying about that guy grabbing the dude's leg and he's out. So Robinson's out. Hartenstein's got 5 fouls in the third quarter. And the tallest player on the Knicks is 6'8". And you give me 1 point and one rebound in the fourth quarter. I know they're double teaming him. I'm not an idiot. I understand. I was watching what was happening. I figured it out. Look at the great players in the history of the NBA. They never got double teamed before. I mean, give me a break with this. Every time they're letting Embiid down, they're all right. Like, enough is enough. Like, I understand there's absolutely some legitimacy to it, but I can't hear that anymore with 1 point and one rebound.
I think you're fed up with the amount of attention that he has to grab, and you're just so fed up with all the excuses that have been built up and built in for him. But for me, it's just like, this is reality, man. Like, not one person is going to will themselves to the series. Like, damn, he just scored 50 points last game. Like, dog, can Tobias Harris give me 15? Can Maxey do something more than what he did in the fourth quarter too? I hear you loud and clear, but let's be real about it. He was getting bracketed. He was getting doubled by OG and all them. It was going to be more difficult to score. And I feel like it's easier for him to score on Hartenstein than it is on Ananobi. Anyway, like, as crazy as that sounds,
Let's put it in the context.
Yeah.
Look at the plus minus. Joel Embiid was a plus one in a game in which they lost by five. Guess what every other person was?
Minus five, six, seven, eight.
Everybody else except for Kyle Lowry and Joel Embiid were minus.
Like,
everybody else. Yeah. Like, I've never, like, have you ever seen that?
Like, on top of that, you have to affect shots on the defensive end too. Like, it's just a lot that he has to do, and he has to carry this team. And damn it, he kind of did carry the team today. He still had a great stat line. I think he had, 27, 10, and 6, I believe, to end the game.
But 7 for 19.
At the end of the day, this is on Nurse.
Point in the fourth
quarter. By the way, that's not good. I'm not – the 7 for 19, the 1 point isn't good. Like,
I'm putting this on Nurse because you got to find a way to get Joel and B, some rest.
Yeah. And on top of that, he can't pass up that jumper on that after the timeout when he had wide open and he tried to go in the lane and get the bucket from there. Like, dog, you haven't been getting easy shots this whole entire quarter. You got to go up there. You got to put that bucket up. But sure, I'm just being real about it.
I mean, but at that point, to be honest with you, at that point, the game's over. We were down five at that point, right?
I believe so. I think it was like 5-3.
Yeah, it was five or 20.
It
was going to take a lot in order to win that game in that moment anyway. But still, it's just like, you have a wide open shot too. You haven't been getting wide open shots the whole entire quarter. To take it, and then you go in there, you smoke the layup, looking for the foul call. It's just like, bro, that right there is just like a microcosm of everything that's just happened throughout the series. Like smoking layups, missing offensive rebounds, just not hustling, just all the factors that Doc Rivers had the Sixers doing in previous years, literally just happened in the last 5 minutes of a damn basketball game that we just watched. Like, that was one of the most epic collapses I've seen in a while for a Sixers team, going back to just game two when they was in the Garden, when they had that the one minute left and they're up six. How many times are we going to be going through this, yo? You know what's crazy? The other day I was actually talking to somebody. We were ranking our most disappointing Sixers losses since in the playoffs since 2017 or 2018 was the first year that they started making the playoffs. And that game too ranked sixth or seventh. That's how many heartbreaking losses the Sixers had. Yeah, it's bad. It's bad. This is another one too. This is top notch bad.
I got a question for you guys, because Nick Nurse said he wanted to win the early fourth quarter minutes with Embiid. What did you think about the decision to leave him in the whole fourth quarter? Because I think that, granted, it's a balancing act, because we've been struggling with Embiid on the bench. But at the same time, you can't have Joel Embiid dead tired coming off of this injury situation. So what did you guys think of that decision?
Honestly, I understand it from Nick Nurse's perspective. There's no great answer there for him. Like you said, Ryan, they were up 27-17. And then it's the same story that we've been watching for how many? I know there were some playoffs in there where it wasn't an issue. But going back to 2019, where you're seeing all the splits of the Embiid minutes versus the non-Embiid minutes. And so if you're Nick Nurse, and you say you can't even play Buddy Hield, by the way, the trade deadline acquisition. I mean, he was a DNP, right? Coach's decision.
Buddy didn't get a minute.
I know he's not for Embiid, but if you're Nick Nurse and you're saying we got to have this game, and I just saw what happened in the first half when I took Embiid out, and the guy is a superstar, and he's he is our guy, even if I get him at 70% or whatever it might be, and he's fatigued. Can I count on him to battle through? Just having him out there gives us our best chance to win. I understand the decision. I'm not saying it's right, and I understand Embiid was fatigued at the end. I mean, he played 44 minutes. It's all fair. There are very analytical ways to look at it and say, Sheil, you're crazy. Your rant was ridiculous. Get out of here. It's other. But, at some point, I don't know. Isn't that sports? Isn't that the NBA? That the guy who is your guy, sometimes in a big spot where the chips are down and other people aren't coming through, he's got to be the one to kind of just get you over the finish line in a big. Isn't that how it works? I don't know.
Yeah, honestly, I agree. I agree with you. There's no right or wrong answer. Let's be real. The dude has half a leg. So at some point, he probably should have rested at some point during the end of the third.
You're right.
But they get smoked. But they get smoked anytime he does not play.
Right. If they take him out and then they probably lose by 10. Gone, then what are we saying? We're going to be saying, maybe they should have just left him in. So it's Nick Nurse is he didn't have a good decision either way.
Yeah. And they probably lose by 10. That's being real, right?
That's what they said during the broadcast, right? Richard Jefferson, I think.
Richard Jefferson pointed out.
If you sat him, they'd be down by 10 right now.
He wasn't wrong. You weren't getting much from anybody else. Think about it. I'm looking at the Batum minutes, 21 minutes, 0-for-3, and seven? He had seven rebounds, but still, the production isn't there. You don't trust Buddy Hield anymore. Obviously, by the way, Melton had some nasty minutes too. Melton came in the game. He played 7 minutes. I don't know why he's even seeing the floor right now. Melton, he's clearly hurt.
Yeah.
He's been out of rotation for a minute now. What's the point of playing? Are you trying to, maybe he could defend, come in? He's a spotty shooter anyway, as it is. He doesn't really do much on offense, low key. He's not coming in there giving you a spark on the offensive end. He's a better defender than he is on the offensive end. So it's what's the point of bringing him? At that point, you might as well just play Buddy and just stick him in the corner and have him shoot threes. Why is he not doing that?
Yeah.
How are you not figuring out that Buddy Hill is a better, he's a set
Buddy's
shooter.
Buddy's not even shooting.
He's a set shooter. Put him in the corner. Like,
I mean, he's been missing jump shots though. Like the time he did play, he can't make
because they're coming off the dribble. Like he's not a come off the dribble guy. He is I'm putting my feet down. I'm gonna set my feet in the corner and I'm gonna launch it and it's gonna go in half the time. Why are we not doing that with him? They're bringing him off DHOs and stuff like that. And I'm like, bro, this is not his game.
I think in the first quarter of game three, they had him in. And I think he had a couple set shots and he missed them. And then after that, they went the campaign. And then I think at that point, it was just like, all right, we're never going to get this guy going. So it's just like, man. Like y'all said, I mean, Nick Nurse is just kind of running out of answers. But at the same time,
he's trying stuff, right? So it's like, I can't be
mad at
that.
I will say this, though. Okay, if they had a game like this under Doc Rivers where they don't make a basket in the 5 minutes, people would be leading the discussion with Doc Rivers. So I think it's fair to, I mean, isn't that true? Like Raheem, you were saying, I mean, you came out and you led it with, you know, like Nick Nurse. And I think that's totally fair. Like, I like Nick Nurse. Nick Nurse is a very good coach. Mm. But if this same game unfolds last year with Doc Rivers, I mean, come on. The first thing everyone's doing is crushing the coach. So, yeah, he can't escape that.
Did that not happen last year, game six? Right? This literally happened game six.
They just have these games. They don't score. Last 5 minutes. You have to score in the last 5 minutes of a game to win in a playoff game. I'm sorry. Maybe they don't know that, but yeah, they just have these games over and over.
I mean, not only do you have to score, you have to get a defensive rebound. Yeah. Like, I swear to God.
Like tap outs, and it's crazy because everybody said Hardstyle wasn't in the game, but it's like, yo, they got better athletes on that end of the floor. All they doing is literally jumping out, tapping the ball out to Brunson or whoever. They gang rebound. Like the Sixers literally don't box out for, I was going to curse on here, but it's a family friendly program. You know what I'm saying? But they don't box out. Like they just let any and everybody go up and get the rebounds. And second chance point, Deuce McBride hitting the three. Second chance point, OG Anunoby hitting the three. Dante, Wash.
15 offensive rebounds. 15 offensive rebounds.
21 to 8 in the second chance point disparity. That's the difference of a game.
I'm sure a lot of it rebounded by 10. Josh Hart. I mean, look. Yeah. Okay. So, all right. So I hear what you were saying with like the stuff with Embiid, but then compare it to the Knicks, honestly. Like, they don't have Julius Randle for the series, they lose Mitchell Robinson. In this game, Bogdanovich goes down. That's a rotation guy. Jalen Brunson goes to the locker room with something and comes back out in the fourth quarter. Hartenstein had so you gotta overcome stuff sometimes. Jalen Brunson just dropped 47 on the road with the shorthanded team and some kind of injury. Josh Hart, he's not able to, you know, it's not like he put up big point. He was 0 for 7, 17 rebounds for Josh Hart.
He like 7 for 5 on the glass.
I mean,
bro,
they did not have a guy over 6'8 playing in the fourth quarter and you couldn't get a rebound. I mean, it's just like I was honestly, this is the feeling I had, and people are gonna get mad at. I was watching that game.
OG had 14 rebounds?
Yeah, OG had 14 and Josh Hart had 17. They combined for 31 rebounds. Those two. I was watching that game going, This is the kind of team I would like rooting for. And I'm not telling you the Knicks are gonna win a championship. They probably will not win a championship with this team. But like, that's the type of team that I would just watch and be like, all right, like they want this. Like they want to play another series. They want this series to be over. They want to bounce back. They have whatever all the old school. Listen, I like the analytical stuff, but sometimes the old school sports cliches are legit. You know, they've got the mental toughness. Yeah. How can you look at the rebounding numbers and think of it anything more than the Knicks just like wanted it more?
They wanted it
and
more.
Were more aggressive, right? Is that like a wrong way to look at it, or is that actually what it was?
It's completely the right way to look at it. And I sent you this on StatMuse a little bit earlier today when we were texting. It was after four games, the Sixers have 36 offensive rebounds and 40 second chance points. The Knicks have 61 offensive rebounds and 79 second chance points. Great. That's the difference of a series right there. I think they're only like a 4-point differential. There's only like a 4-point total differential in this series, I believe, or something like that. Something close like that. So this is nuts.
Definitely four.
Is it four?
Yeah.
That's crazy. Four-point differential, and you're down 3-1. Oh, my goodness.
That tells you the hustle is winning. That's what that tells you.
I mean, you saw a key play. You look at it like this. It was 78-77. Campaign makes the layup. 11 minutes to go. DiVincenzo misses a layup. Precious gets an offensive rebound. Missed tip shot. Offensive team rebound. McBride hits the three, and then, you know, campaign scores after that, but we never have the lead again for the rest of the game.
504 like the last time they made a basket.
504. 504 is the last time they made a basket. And again, like I said, I thought the offense was atrocious. They were going up the court and literally not running anything. Like,
horrendous possessions. Turnovers, bad shots.
Maxie took the ball. Yo, shot clock violations. Like, yo, they gave Embiid that ball in that three and Precious Achiuwa just sent it to the second row because he had no choice.
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing here, bro? This is just nonsense.
And you know, the funny thing is, I think there was another key play that I mean, maybe it doesn't mean anything, but we were down 3 points. And Joel Embiid gets one of the few defensive rebounds we had towards the end of the game. He passes it out to Maxie. The ref calls it out of bounds. Yeah. And look, we got it reversed in our favor, but Maxie was on the break.
I thought that was a momentum and killer.
Yeah, and that's one of those, like, Maxie is one of those guys to where if he can get out in transition, he has an easier chance of scoring than he does in the half court. And I felt like that killed some momentum for us, even though we got the ball back. You know, it's just, there were just so many plays we just didn't make. And I think that's what it comes down to, unfortunately.
Yeah, it just feels like the same thing year after year. And it just, like, some stuff with this team just puts a bad taste in my mouth. Like the belly aching after game two, I understand things didn't go in their favor. It's like, sometimes you get a bad call, you know? And Nick Nurse, don't tell me call timeout twice. That first timeout he tried, that was a Bobo timeout. The hands, he wasn't sure. He wasn't sure if he wanted it or not. Sometimes you got to overcome stuff and win a game.
We got a makeup call on that timeout in this game, too.
Yeah.
Because when Maxie was on the floor in the fourth quarter, I don't know if he had possession of that ball.
Oh, yeah,
but they gave us
the
timeout.
Yeah. I mean.
So. But the one thing I will say, I'll say about Maxie, because he didn't have his best game. I was concerned going into the postseason because this is his first postseason without James Hart. And he is now the primary ball handler. When James Harden was there, he was the third guy. So it's easier to get off and really play well when you're not that high on the pecking order. But now when you're at the top of the scouting report, you start to see what a guy is. And, you know, this is his first year. So I do want to, like, I don't want to be too critical of him, but I kind of knew he would have these bumps in the road.
Yeah. I mean, the first two games he outplayed Brunson the first two games. So now it's reversed. Brunson came to Philly. I was just
started cooking.
That's not happening anymore. And it's just gone off.
He's so used to playing at Villanova. This is home for him.
I mean, when he had that and one and went into the crowd, you're just like, I can see why Knicks fans.
Shaking hands with people.
Yeah.
Shaking hands with people.
Fan right there. Like, I could see. That's when I was like, I could see why if I were a Knicks fan in New York and I had a chance to go watch this team on a Sunday afternoon in Philly and I was like that, I can see why you would get behind them, and they haven't had teams like this. And so the franchises are in very different spots. Like, and there's no excuse for it. The arena still should not look like that. But if you're a Sixers fan, there's just like fatigue has built up. If you're a Knicks fan, you're like, this is new. This is exciting. You have a guy you can get behind who you haven't had in what, decades? If you're a Knicks fan, and now, you know, you're at, what was Dawn, what do you think Dawn Staley, which team do you think she like respected more when she was watching that game, honestly? When they were showing her next to AI, man. And Dr. J, I loved how into it she was. And then at the end of the game, I bet she's thinking like, all right, yeah, I know which team I want my team to look like. And it's not the team I was rooting for there. Honestly, she had to be thinking, I love how this Knicks team plays, and I don't get what this Sixers team is doing. Right?
She's probably looking at the offense like, damn, I could probably draw something better up than whatever.
Well, she 100% could. Yeah. She should have jumped into the huddle or something.
they should have gave her the clipboard, right? They should have gave her the clipboard. You're like, yo, Dawn, come here. We need some help real quick. But damn, man, I mean, they disappointed Dr. J. They had AI in the house.
AI, Doc, and Dawn Staley. And that's what you do in the fourth quarter.
You know, AI wanted to spend his time. He'd rather spend his Sunday at the Sugar House or Harris.
Live, live casino. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they brought him out of there, and I mean, they
there's so much that we just unpacked about that game, and I'm still like in my head. I'm just like, I mean, do they come out with any type of fire in New York? What's the next? Excuse me, I didn't check. Is it Tuesday?
Tuesday.
I mean, do they come
Thursday,
out with
Saturday? If it goes that far.
If possible, right?
I think the problem is, I mean, it's twofold. So Joel Embiid played the entire second half. and I'm really big, especially when it comes on to playoff basketball, is the cumulative impact of your minutes over time. That's something I'm a firm believer in. I'm a believer in that when it comes to game, but I'm also a believer in that series to series. So if you play Joel Embiid the entire second half, you have to get that game.
Yeah, great point.
Yeah.
And then absolutely. When you don't get that game, it just puts you in a bad spot for the following game. And then Jalen Brunson has finally showed up to the party.
Yeah.
I don't know how you overcome that.
Yeah, I mean, a 47-piece of, what was it, 40? Was it 40 the other night or 39 or something like that the other night for Jalen Brunson?
I think he had 39 the other night, yeah.
I mean, when he coming out playing like that, like, it ain't really too much. You can't, because nobody could stop tonight. Him. Nobody could do anything with him. Like, Kelly Oubre was getting hibachied up. Whoever else was in front of him was just, seriously. Yeah. Whoever was
Tobias was getting worked on.
Yeah, like
Maxie had some good defense at times, and he was making tough shots.
He did.
I mean, again, so that's what you need.
Didn't he have a block on him? Or no, Campaign. It was a Campaign that had a block on him?
Campaign got him. You know my guy Campaign was going to get him one time.
He's Campaign. Oh, yeah, no, Campaign's been out there giving out good minutes the last two games, yo, and providing energy, too. So shout out to Campaign and Kyle Lowry's being hustled. Oh, we ain't talking about the Kyle Lowry foul line when he was like, yo, I missed a shot. When it was when it was down three, Oubre and him wasn't paying attention. Yeah. How crazy is that?
I don't know what, but like Oubre and Maxi didn't know. So clearly there's some type of communication problem with this team.
But
because
but at the same time, it's like if you're Kyle Lowry, you have to say, like, hey, look, like everybody crashed. Like this is happening right here, right now. Like, and they had a chance too. Like, the crazy part is the miss was like, had a nice.
It was right there.
It was right there, bro. It was right there. And it's like, this is the thing about Kelly Oubre. I love his hustle. I love his tenacity. I love his intensity. But, bro, he makes so many like infuriating / frustrating plays where you're just like, what the hell is this guy doing? Like, there's so many times.
What do you think his awareness is on NBA 2K?
It got, yo, 72. I think it's 72. 72.
Like, I mean, it's got to be pretty bad. 72. Like, I mean, between, like, his, and I don't want to go into anybody's personal life, but, I mean, like, come on, man.
In light of recent.
Oh my gosh.
Hey, yo, no, first of all, shout out to KO, man. We're not gonna do it like that.
That foul shot, well, that's hard to put. You're right. There's gotta be some kind of, because it wasn't a no-brainer. You miss it here. I mean, that was one you could do. You could go either way. So if that, I mean, I can't really kill them if they don't know it's coming, you know.
You have no Kyle like Lowry, you have to after you make or whatever happens with the first free throw, you gotta be like, hey, look, like this is about to happen. Everybody gotta have, you know how like the quarterback got a signal to the wide receiver or something like that?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you got the hand up. Aaron Rodgers always does the towel thing. Tom Brady used to do.
Yeah.
I don't know,
Omaha.
Something. Like, whatever.
It's not the first time it's happened. Also, it's not like that hasn't happened at all this season. Like, I'm sure
it hasn't happened in their life.
Yeah. Right. Like, yeah. You got
everybody has a late game situation that they has a million late game situations that they practice. And that should have been one of them. Like, hey, look, dog, like we need to get this offensive rebound right now. And that ball was there for the taking and not enough Sixers, but red jerseys were in there. We're in there to try and get it. So, damn, yo, they had John Starks at the game, bro. What's up with all? This is nuts, man.
But you know that's a microcosm of the series, because I can guarantee you, if the Knicks were on the opposite end of that, somebody would have went after that ball. They wanted it more
100%.
Than that. Period.
That's true. It's a great point.
Every hustle play. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to imagine that same play. Where the Knicks are just like, where they're not getting that ball. Like, if it's tipped back, they're going to be like, that's, man, I'm still laughing at Raheem. I'm going to be laughing about that. Oh, my gosh. Man. Yeah, Brunson last two games, 80, he goes off for 86, averaging 43 a game in these two in Philadelphia, shooting right around, let me see, do the quick, man, right around 50%. From the field. I mean, today 47, 10 assists and one turnover in 44 minutes with having whatever the injury did, going out and coming back in. So, I mean, I don't know. Listen, it's a weird series. Maybe it'll go a little bit longer, but Raheem, you made a great point. Yeah. If you're playing Embiid, if you're playing that card that for the first time in his career, we're going to play him the entire second half because we need this game. Again, I understand why you do that. But then when you don't get the game, it's like pitching, you know, it's like getting the pitcher out of the bullpen in like game six and then shoot, you didn't win game six. And now game seven, you don't have him, you know, the starter, the game, whatever starter you brought him out. It's like that. Now he's got 2 days and you're going to the Garden and they're going to be going nuts. And he just played 44 minutes in his last game like that. It's a tough ask. I mean, it's like you said, it's an evenly matched series. I mean, the point differential in four games is what you mentioned earlier. So it's not like they can't win that game and bring it. I mean, what would be fitting for this team, honestly, would be to win that game and then come back to Philly and lose that game with Knicks fans at the arena.
I mean, damn it. It feels like the Knicks got a home court advantage everywhere they go, so it doesn't even matter, right? Yeah. Like,
yeah,
it's their court anywhere they go. Bro, did you see the video after the game? All those Knicks fans are chanting Knicks in five inside on the Wells Fargo. You know how like, you walk in there. It's crazy. No, but it's actually like, it's nuts. Like, you got, this is in the concourse in the Wells Fargo Center. My friends had, some of my boys just sent me a text. They're like, Cliff, this is what we do on the Sixers fan. Where the Sixers fans at?
These I mean, it's fun to go to an opposing, like, I remember when like, AI played at the.
They in there doing all types of loud chants in there.
Yeah. That's fun. I remember I watched AI play at the Fleet Center back in the day. He dropped 40 plus. That's like a memorable experience. You go watch your team play somewhere else and you got this like festive atmosphere and a bunch of you are there and you feel like you take over. I mean, those are really fun. I'm sure people listening to this have done that for Eagles games or whatever. And the Knicks did that to the Sixers these two games. And they only won one, but yeah, there's no two ways about it. That was a storyline coming out of these two games. All right, any final word? That was fun. No, that was a good, I felt like we all, yeah, kind of needed that. It's a Sunday evening. We're just like, let's cut loose.
It's therapeutic.
Yeah, Raheem, any words of wisdom here as we look ahead to Tuesday or any closing words from you?
Well, I just want us to compete on Tuesday. That's all I want. Just compete. Don't go out there and get smoked. But the positive is that we could be watching our last game on Tuesday rooting for Tobias Harris. And it's just like, if there's any positive from this, that's it. We don't have to deal with this guy anymore.
Oh my God. Oh, I love it. Cliff, anything from you?
All right.
Are you keeping the faith? You've been very positive. Even when they went down 2-0, you were positive. You gotta
get on your 2016 Cleveland Cavaliers vibe, bro. Like, if you go in there, you gotta run back some LeBron clips, blocking Iguodala, LeBron going off for like 47, Kyrie doing his thing, working like a magician in that series. Get some type of like some inspiration from somewhere. Like, listen, we down 3-1, we about to make history. We gonna go into the Garden in that game. We gonna go in the Garden game five. We're going to come out victorious. We're going to play it cool. We're going to come back to Philly. Josh Harris and them, y'all got to let actual Sixers fans actually sit in the lower portion of the arena and not try to sell tickets or whatever. You have enough money. You got the
Commanders.
You
know what he could have done, Josh Harris? He could have sold that Louis Vuitton sweatshirt he had on. He could have paid for tickets, and he could have handed them out to Sixers fans. That's an easy solution, Josh Harris.
Josh Harris got a lot of money, man. They just drafted Jaden Daniels. The Commanders got a nice little squad down there. Him and Magic Johnson doing their thing. So, listen, you can more than afford to – if the Sixers win game five, you can more than afford to let actual Sixers fans get them lower seats, have the arena be filled with actual Sixers fans who can afford some damn tickets – go to the game and cheer for their damn home team. And then if we win game six, game seven, Madison Square Garden, Philly, New York, it would be lit. Joel Embiid gets a nice little 45 piece. And then it is round two. It's not a first round exit. It might be a second round exit. Who knows? But I'm hopeful. Sixers and seven.
If that happens, I will come on and I will apologize for my previous rant during this.
If that podcast happens, oh my God.
I don't think it's going to happen, but I'm like,
I don't think it's going to happen.
Yo, like,
I'm just going to say this. Don't let us get one.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? Who would be the funniest guy to say that? Buddy Hield? Tobias Harris?
No, campaign.
Campaign would mean it, though.
Oh,
he would mean it. The other guy?
I think if Tobias said it, people would just be generally angry. If campaign said it, people would be like, yeah, campaign. We feel you.
He might say it, honestly. If the guy's on there.
No, Paul Reed, yo. Paul Reed. Is Paul Reed the one he liked talking a lot? So Paul Reed. It'd be Paul Reed.
-6 in 4 minutes Oh man,
why you gonna do Paul like yo? No. Why you do Paul like that? Why you do Paul like that? B-ball Paul, come on, man. All
right, I apologize.
We gonna see Ricky Council? We gonna see Ricky Council at some point?
Yeah, I was thinking that exact same thing because it's just like, yo, we're not gonna get anything from the bench.
At least get some dogs in there.
Yes.
Can you try out Ricky Council?
Yeah.
Like,
D'Anthony Melton played seven minutes. You're telling me he couldn't play those 7 minutes?
Right. Seven horrific minutes, too, by the way.
Yeah.
D'Anthony Melton, and by the way, it's not Melton's fault. Like, he has a hurt back. Like,
right.
The man,
he's injured.
It feels like he
shouldn't
even be playing.
Yeah, I don't blame him. Right. I agree.
Like, he shouldn't be. But it's crazy.
But you know, I mean, you know what, though? Nick Nurse has always been like Thibs light. So it's just like he runs his guys into the ground. I mean, if you could look at, you know, what he did with Toronto, like, even in. You go back to the 2019 series with Toronto and Philadelphia. He was playing like six guys.
Yeah.
Fred VanVleet was horrible in that series, and he ran with Fred VanVleet. So he runs with his guys in the same way that a Thibs or even a Doc does. But the difference between him and Doc, he's willing to try, you know, different schemes and stuff like that. But he has his guys, and he's sticking with them.
Yeah, Kawhi Leonard with like a half a leg was playing like 45 minutes in that series. And they had overtime games too. So it's like, Nick Nurse definitely has a history of just running like 6-7 guys out there and just running them through the ground. So
that is very true. If they lose in five, they can just file a grievance that we should have won the series, you know, and get that, keep going with that loser energy.
Yeah, you throw a lot of shade on the Sixers. Yeah,
I mean, yeah, I'm annoyed, but honestly, yeah, I have other stuff on here that I was ready to say, but I'm like, just she'll wait till if they lose the series, you know, save something for that. I love the don't let us win one, man. I'm going to be thinking about that. Raheem, listen, the Sixers didn't bring it today, Cliff. Raheem last second said he could join, and Raheem brought, I mean, this might be my favorite Philly special appearance by Raheem today. He was making me crack up during this entire segment. So hopefully he did that to you guys too. All right. Thank you to Raheem Palmer. Thank you to Cliff Augustine. We'll be back at some point. Cliff, give me the voicemail. Number. I might want to do a whole voicemail episode later this week. Let the people, because I know people have stuff to say after this episode.
215-315-7982. 215-315-7982. And I will put it in the description underneath when you guys look on Spotify or Apple, wherever you
leave those voicemails, leave those reviews, leave those ratings. We'll talk to you soon next time on the Ringers Philly Special. Must be 21 plus, 18 plus in DC, and present in select states. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas under an agreement with Kansas Star Casino, LLC. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit FanDuel.com/RG. In Colorado, DC, Iowa, Michigan, New Jersey, North Carolina, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Kentucky, Tennessee, Virginia, and Vermont, call 1-800-NEXTSTEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342 in Arizona, 1-888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut, 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana, 1-800-522-4700 or visit ksgamblinghelp.com in Kansas, 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana. Visit mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland. Visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia or call 1-800-522-4700 in Wyoming. Hope is here. Visit gamblinghelplinema.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support in Massachusetts or call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York.